This is the son of PCJ. From Studio 35 at the Voice of America, this is PCJ Radio. And you're listening to the Happy Station Show, produced and presented by Keith Perrell. Keith's special guest on this edition is Larry Landon of Border Crossings. Has Keith cleared security yet? Or is he being subjected to a strip search?
Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening from Studio 35 in Washington, D.C., USA. Welcome to the Happy Station Show. We have a fun show today. As we heard in the intro by Bob Zanotti, our special guest today is Larry Landon, host of Border Crossings, heard at 15 hours UTC around the world on a number of different frequencies as well as local stations. Larry, you may remember, was on the show, last year? And I thought, well, you know what, we're going to be in Washington, so we should do this face-to-face and have just a ball of a time. So today's show is going to be, of course, less music, which I know will upset some people, but don't worry. Larry, I think, will fill that gap. He will definitely fill that gap. Anyway, we're going to begin, though, with a piece of music, because Larry is still going through that security search, which I can see through the window right now, which, looks rather painful. Ugh. Anyway, this morning, before coming to the VOA, I was walking around Georgetown, and I passed by this shop, and they were playing it really loud, and it started to make me dance. So I can now proudly say, yes, I've danced in the streets of Washington, D.C. The Secret Service guys thought I was very strange. I think they were about to call the asylum. Anyway, Paul McCartney, Ballroom Dancing.
Oh,
You know, I have to tell you one thing. It's such an interesting feeling being here. When I came into this building, it's the first radio station that I walked into, and I'm saying to myself, am I going through an airport?
Leave your jewelry in the plastic box.
Yeah, it's like, you know, they take your belt off, put your coins in the box. It's always been that way, right?
Did they give you your jewelry back? That's the question. Normally, we all get in the, you know, we don't tell anybody, but the employees, we get to pick from the rings and the watches. And
yeah, I saw that. There was a drawer that they opened, and there were a whole bunch of watches
that's it.
Inside.
I've got a couple of Rolexes that I got.
Cheap copies of the original.
That's it. Nice to see you in person, though.
Nice to see you in person as well. Last time we did it by phone. Mm-hmm. Is this the studio that we're in? It says Studio 35. Is this where you do border crossings from?
No, that, you know, right now is on the second floor in this building. We're on the third floor. This is the studio that we use for the Music Mix programs, which is we have a Music Mix network that's around the clock. We record the shows here. The live studios are on the second floor. Much bigger, different kinds of studios because there's more people involved. So there's a technical area where the engineer would sit. There's where the producers would sit, the phones. They don't trust me enough to let me touch anything. So I sit in another room separately with just the microphone. On this floor, I get a little more trust so I can touch the stuff.
Now, let me ask you, for somebody who doesn't know what Music Mix is, what is it exactly? You said it's a 24-hour network.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you go to? How does it work?
Well, it's the Voice of America's Border Crossings is a program which is carried by the Music Mix Network. The Music Mix Network is a Voice of America's music network, and it's distributed by satellite and by internet, and we broadcast 24/7 different various programs, long form programs and whatnot. And we also it's very similar to American style radio where it's nonstop. And there are three different DJs, and we each come in for a 4-hour show, which gets repeated. So that's how you get your 24 hours. You get your money's worth. You know, we just rerun the shows.
But Border Crossings, is it part of that?
Yep.
Okay.
Well, I get my little hour inserted there in between. And you know, it's a word that we don't like to use in radio, but it's the reality of it. It's filler. You know, I mean, there's radio networks that have their live morning drive show and their afternoon drive show or whatever show, and they need to fill a spot or fill an hour, fill here, fill there. So they go to the Music Mix part of VOA to provide an hour of American-style programming so that we get preempted for border crossings for the markets or the affiliates that want to carry border crossings. Well, otherwise, they still get me, but they get me in a different form.
Mm-hmm. You have quite a long history actually working in international radio. You've been here at the VOA for some time.
I celebrated my 123rd birthday. I just want you to know that. I just had to tell you, in case you didn't know.
But some of our listeners now in China mm-hmm. will know you. When I wrote a tweet and Facebooked it mm-hmm. that I was coming down here to meet you and we were going to record something here at VOA, a few of people responded on Facebook, oh, I remember listening to Larry so long ago.
Wow. That's great. You know, I know that CRI just had a big anniversary. They had me record a testimonial to their anniversary they're celebrating. And so I know that I was getting comments and messages back from some of the people in China. But it's just, to me, it will always be the highlight of my career, being in Asia, broadcasting in Asia. And, you know, this is not too bad either, you know, being able to broadcast to 60 countries every day for a living. You know, I still have, even after 10 years, I haven't put my hands around it. I can't grasp the magnitude of what we're doing. But actually living in China and having had the chance to go to Beijing and Shanghai and other places throughout China and live in Hong Kong, I'll you know, never be able to replace that time in my life ever again.
One thing I love doing is talking to guys who work as jocks in domestic radio here in the U.S. or in Europe. And they say, well, what did you do for a couple of years in China? I said, well, I hosted an afternoon drive show for China Radio International. It was heard around the country. We had a probability around between 5 million listeners a day.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody in the U.S. has 5 million listeners a day at a local market.
On a bad day, you know, 5 million.
But, I mean, let me ask you. I mean, when you come into the studio, I don't know about you, but for myself, and you do a show that goes to many different countries – I find it rather thrilling, and I always think, what are these people doing? And then you get pictures of people, you know, in their little house. Maybe they don't have electricity. They're listening on an old battery-powered radio or solar-powered radio mm-hmm. or wind-up radio. And I've noticed that this audience tends to be more focused on what you're saying than, let's say, North American audiences.
Right, right, right. Well, there was a time that radio DJs, either RJs or DJs or whatever you call them these days, there was a time that we were respected, that we were, you know, it was a prestigious job to be a disc jockey, you know, in the 50s and Alan Freed in that time and in the 60s. But then less and less we became background noise. We became electronic wallpaper. We became less liner card readers. And I find in other countries where we are still respected, it's very gratifying because they do, as you say, pay attention to what we say. They care genuinely about us. You know, people here in America, it's a different time and it's a different world, and people are all about me, 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 and convenience and fast, give it to me fast. And, you know, we're not that important anymore. But, you know, in other countries where we still are important, it's nice to know. And I mentioned this on my show today. I said it was very, very rewarding to me. It was an unbelievable experience to think that right now some people hearing my voice are under the stars. Some people are under the sun. Some people are in the rain. Some people are in the snow. But right now we all come together for one common thing, the love of music. All of us share that same thread, the love of music.
I remember last year there was a song by Elvis Presley that you played. And you said we had two letters here, one from Pakistan and one from the United Kingdom. And you said they live different lives. They have different cultural backgrounds. But the thing that they have in common is Elvis Presley. And they requested the same song. That is kind of cool when you think about it, because I think with what you do and what I do in this form of radio, it's almost like what radio used to be like 30 years ago when it was about personalities. It was about the presenters on the air. And it's almost like a form of social media, if you think about it, before the internet came along. Mm-hmm. You know, we're responding to the letters, getting people involved in the program. It's like an early version of Facebook, you can say.
Right. And I'm sure that you share this feeling with me. I look at what I do as a privilege. It is a privilege to be able to touch people all around the world who are doing different things, many of whom are suffering through very difficult times, whether it be through natural disasters, through hardships, financial hardships, whatever, oppressive governments, whatever they're in, whatever environment and situation they're in. It is such a privilege to be able to have people listening to what you have to say and caring about what you have to say and what you do. I mean, you know, so to me, I can never, you know, I keep saying this over and over, I am so humbled by all of this. And I'm sure you feel the same way. You know, we are blessed. We are lucky to do what we do for a living. You know, some people say, well, it's not brain surgery. You're not saving anybody's lives. But I think our audience, and by the virtue of the fact that we can do what we do, is saving our lives. It's unbelievable to come in here. I am truly enthusiastic about coming to work every day.
Okay, that leads me to a question. A few questions, actually, that I remember off the top of my head that people asked me to ask you.
Uh-oh.
Rajiv, a faithful listener of ours, and yours.
Hi, Rajiv.
In India. He listens to you, and then he listens to us on a domestic station religiously.
All right. Well, I say namaskar.
And he wanted me to ask you, when you come to the VOA to do the show, because it's mornings here, how do you pick yourself up and go? He wanted to know, does it ever happen? You're in front of the microphone, your mouth is going, you have no idea what you're saying, and then after it's all over, you go,
Well, you know, I think that I found the career that was the right career for me, because I've never been short of words and I've always had the gift of gab. So as far as how I get pumped up, well, you know, I mean, we all have problems. We all have our tough days, tougher than others, you know, some worse than others. But, you know, I mean, you still got to come in here and you have to do what you do for your audience. It isn't about me. It isn't about how I feel. It isn't about I'm having a bad day, so I'm going to sit here and complain on the air. That's not what people are tuning in for. They want to get away from their problems and their world, and they come to us to help them do that, to escape. So I don't, you know, when I come to work, yeah, it's the morning. Thank goodness there's coffee and lots of it. And, you know, so I have my couple of cups of coffee, and I'm ready to go. And I just, you know, again, I'm, you know, you talk to Matthew from our news department. There's a lot of people. VOA's been a news organization, and I've been here 10 years, and I, you know, I'm, you know, able to say this to you because you and I are friends, that the gist of what goes on here at VOA is news-oriented. My teeny tiny itty-bitty little piece of the puzzle here is music, but yet they haven't figured it out. the management at VOA.
But that's the same with every station that I've been at.
I'm sure.
They look at the music guys and they go, oh, you're like some freaks from outer space.
That's right. They don't understand. You know, I mean, how many sound bites do you need of the president, the prime minister, the whoever giving a speech about the same subjects over and over and over? How many times do they think the young people of the world who are finding voices on radios are really compelled? Is that compelling radio to hear the same, you know, a politician over and over and over and over in a different angle and a different network and a different camera shot, but it's the same speech. Whereas you and I, we're playing music and we're enjoying what we're doing, and it's a music that people want to hear. They're telling us what to play. On my show, it's a request show. So they're writing to me and saying, I want to hear this and I want to hear this. And one day I'll play Toby Keith, followed by 50 Cent, followed by Beyonce, and we'll go into something else totally different. So there's a whole bunch of different kinds of music for different kinds of people, but it all works in one place because we all love music.
Border crossings, or even actually the other programs that are on VOA Music Mix, how much of that is pre-programmed by a program director? Or do you come in and go, okay, we have some requests here, I'm going to choose this one and this one, and then just do it?
The Music Mix Network is pre-programmed. It's run just like an American radio station. It's reflective of the American music trends. So we follow charts and playlists, and we go through MediaBase, which is an American snapshot of all American radio and all the markets in the country. And it puts it all together and shuffles it up and tells you what's the top 10, top 20, top 30 on the charts, on the Billboard charts, on this chart, on Rolling Stone and Billboard and da-da-da. And then we have a playlist that's generated by a computer program, which is called Selector. And that's kind of the state of the industry these days in U.S. radio and around the world. You know, people in radio know the word Selector. It's a program. And so it generates our playlist. It generates our music log, we call. And then we follow it. But what I do on border crossings is so unique to American radio. It's so unique to radio in general. It's so unique to Voice of America because it's unscripted, which in a government environment is unheard of, but it's unscripted. They don't censor me. They don't come down on me. They don't, you know, what are you talking about? You know, and my music is uncensored. To the extent where if there's lyrics or words that are inappropriate, if we don't feel comfortable, if I hear a song and I don't feel comfortable with it, if I wouldn't feel comfortable having my 12-year-old daughter listen to the lyrics, those lyrics are either edited out or we just don't play that song.
Okay, you mentioned, let's say, censorship. A good friend of mine in Moscow who's been listening to you for years also works in radio, worked at Radio Moscow, and today Voice of Russia World Service. His name is Vasily Strelnikov. He hosts a show called From Moscow with Love. He was telling me about an incident that happened in the 1980s. A listener wrote him for his show, Vasily's Weekend, and said, I dare you to play the Lumberjack song from Monty Python. So they recorded the show. He sent the tape down to the censors, and he gets a phone call. He said, Comrade Vasily, I don't understand this song about this lumberjack. Why is he so happy? Why is he eating the tea and drinking this? And my friend Vasily told the censor, he said, well, this is about the plight of the Canadian lumberjack and how they're being oppressed all day. And the censor said, oh, very good choice of music. You should play more of this. And it went on the air.
Well, you know, it's you can get away with some things and some things you can't get away with. And the profanity issue these days, you know, unfortunately, in hip hop music becomes more and more prevalent, where songs are really blatantly in your face with, you know, inappropriate lyrics and words. So you can't dance around that stuff.
Well, here, let me ask you this, because the show that you do, the show that I do, one of the concerns that I always have when I go on the air, first of all, is not speaking too fast, which I'm doing a little bit of today. But second of all, making sure that, let's say, somebody whose first language is not English, it could be Hindi, it could be Punjabi, it could be whatever, Indonesian, that they will understand what I'm saying. Because occasionally, I don't know about you, but occasionally I will get letters from somebody saying, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
Or what do you mean by that? What does that say if you say that to somebody? And I always have to think, okay, this show is targeting mainly people who are non-native English speakers.
Right, sure. Now, I mean, you know, I agree with you. I was called when I moved to Hong Kong for the first few weeks that I was on the radio there. I was called the fast-talking American. That was the nickname that I was given because, but it's in the articulation. It's in the voice tone. People like certain tonal qualities of some voices that are more appealing to listen to, and they can follow along and understand. Because I don't know if you speak Chinese. if you speak Mandarin or Cantonese. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you do, but I don't. But I can pick up words, some of the words that I learned, I can understand. Can't understand the whole context of it. So when people listen to us in English, if it's a pleasant voice, and, you know, I think they can get words out of it. Because unless you're just going apple, they're not going to learn, you know, that way. They have to learn conversational English is mm-hmm. different than learning words. And that's why, you know, language cafes and language, you know, exchanges are so popular around the world, because people have a quest for knowledge and for language learning in other places outside of America that's unbelievable. You come here and it's a burden. We force the kids to study a second language in school. It's a requirement. You go to India, you go to China, you go to out of the country where people speak five languages. It's not uncommon mm-hmm. because people love to expand their knowledge. And so we help them do that. And music is a great way to learn to speak English. I mean, I was amazed when I was doing my shows for Joy FM. And at the time that I was doing the show, there wasn't the internet, wasn't really popular back then. So we were doing letters. We'd get hundreds and thousands of letters of requests. Carpenters were by far the most popular requested artist. And here it was, 91, 92, 93. The Carpenters had finished what they were doing, you know, 20 years earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Air Supply came to perform in Hong Kong. Air Supply couldn't fill a phone booth in America, but they sold out a 20,000-seat arena in Hong Kong 3 years in a row. So, I mean, there are artists, there are sounds, you know, just more pleasant to learning English. And I think that you and I, you're lucky you have a sound that's appealing. You have a voice that's appealing. So I feel also equally blessed to be able to have that thing that works. Because some people do the same thing we do. And people say, I can't. What is he saying? Like, I don't understand him.
Here's one. Some of my audience, I don't know if your audience has ever done this to you, especially our listeners in Sri Lanka, Bangladesh, and India, they know that I am quite often, and I'm going to get red-faced, terrible at pronouncing names. And what they will do on purpose is they will, instead of saying the short version of their name, they'll send the full-length version, and I will look at it. And it sounds completely ridiculous. And they do it on purpose. Mm. And they go, oh, that guy is very, very funny the way he sounds something in my name.
Well, I don't know if it's on purpose or not. And I will be the first to be very honest on the air. And I say that I'm you know, doing my best. This is my best shot at a name that I think they understand. That, you know, I mean, people pronounce my name incorrectly a lot of the time. And I'm sure your name as well. You know, I mean, people write, we've got an announcer.
They keep calling me Kiss.
Kiss.
Especially for listeners in China. Hello, Kiss. And I always say, well, maybe later, but not now, you know.
Well, I've been called a number of things and, you know, but it's okay. It's all good. You know, I try to pronounce the names and it's funny. You know, you mess up some names and I've other show hosts and country names as well. You know, I'm not, I don't have a, you know, 50 degrees in studying geology. So I don't know, you know, geography and lands and countries and political histories. And a lot of countries have three names. You know, they've gone through changes. So I'm trying to keep up with one, let alone three names. Burma, Myanmar, right? You know, so you try to keep up. But
well, one of the interesting things about border crossings is that the show is non-political. And it really shows that we, whoever we are, anywhere in the world, have more in common, more similarities than differences. Mm-hmm. Just from the amount of mail that come in or the comments that you see on the Border Crossings Facebook page. I mean, politicians, I think, should be paying more attention, I think, sometimes to what we're doing.
Mm-hmm. I hear you, brother. I hear you. You know, that's I often, you know, say that and as we talk, you know, you have a segment on your show. You'll be talking to another guest here from the Voice of America. His name's Matthew. He's in technology, internet, computers and whatnot. And I've been here 10 years, and that's a very short amount of time in the scheme of government employment. It's a long time for me coming from a commercial background where, you know, you could be fired for having your hair combed the wrong way. But it's just amazing to me that music has been so underutilized and undervalued, because I think that, you know, and it's not only me, I've heard this echoed many times, that the greatest export that America has is entertainment. People love our movies. They love our music. They love our show business stuff. You know, fashion, that belongs to Paris and Italy and whatnot. But music, I mean, everybody wants to be the Asian Madonna, the Michael Jackson of Hong Kong, the who and who, you know, because it comes from the U.S.
But it's everywhere. I mean, this past summer, I was in Singapore, and then I took a drive to Malaysia just across the border and was staying in an area where there was one TV station. And I'm thinking, okay, there mustn't be anything on. I turned it on. What do I see? The Big Bang Theory dubbed into the local language.
Right.
I mean, of all shows to see here.
I wonder how the humor translates. That's because translating humor to another language, another culture, boy, that's a challenge.
Well, that's my next question. I mean, I find it difficult sometimes because there, say a listener will write in with a joke and I get it. And I think to myself, if I say it, will this person understand it in some other country? Because drama translates well. Mm-hmm. Action films. I mean, of course, you know, it's visual. Comedy, unless it's visual, doesn't translate.
Right. Because, you know, that's why the slapstick is big around the world. The beating up, the slapping, you know.
A Benny Hill, you know.
Exactly. But there's slapstick, there's props, there's stuff like that. But humor itself is difficult. And, you know, I'm just myself, you know. I mean, people say, oh, Larry, you're so funny. I'm just being myself. I'm just having fun. And I think having fun, doing what you're doing, can be contagious. Laughter is infectious. It's contagious. People laugh and it's laughter spreads. And if you're having a good time and you're smiling about what you're doing and not taking things too seriously or approaching things too heavily, you know, I think that translates well. You know, and I enjoy what I'm doing. And, you know, I have a good rapport with the audience because I know what makes people laugh in other countries and cultures because I've lived somewhere else. So that helps. You know, having lived around the world, being somewhere else, you know, you can tell my voice is going because I've got this thing that people are getting. So my voice is going to deteriorate right before your ears. I'm going to melt down.
Okay. The VOA mainly targets, of course, by their mandate, audiences overseas.
Yes.
Do you ever get people in the U.S. writing you?
All the time. You know, one of the largest audiences that I have on the show, and you probably gathered this from listening, is Peace Corps volunteers who are Americans stationed elsewhere, but they find this and say, ah, slice of home. So, and I've often told people it's amazing. I get military who write in, send email, member of the military who are in Iraq. They find us on, you know, either closed circuit or shortwave or satellite or internet. I don't know how they get us, but they write in. And it's just amazing. For me to be playing music that I think to myself, I'm on the Voice of America in Washington, D.C., and I'm playing a request from somebody who lives in Iraq. For all I know, they could be, you know, some military affiliation, and they're listening to my songs that I'm playing. They made a request for all I know. Who knows? Maybe they, you know. And also the military, the soldiers, who they're fighting against each other, are both listening to me playing a song for that part of the world. And I just find that just blows my mind. You know, it's amazing. But, you know, we have all kinds of people listening in all kinds of places, and a lot of people are American stationed overseas, expats, and I get a tremendous amount of people who, you know, because in America there's people who are on the internet and they're always surfing and looking for music and music radio stations on the internet. And so they find us, you know, Voice of America, which has 70 years of history to it. So they find, oh, VOA, what do they do? And then through navigating through our websites and whatnot, they come across Border Crossings or the Music Mix Network or whatever.
Okay. Let's talk about your personal taste for a moment.
Oh, no. You don't want to talk about that.
Music-wise.
Pizza. Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay, music, pizza. Right. That's a good band.
All right, there you go. Pizza.
What are some of your favorites?
You know, if I ever made a band, I'm sorry, before I answer that question, I was thinking if I ever made a band, if I was in a band and they said, well, what can we call ourselves? Free Beer. What a great name.
I think that says something about your habits here.
Could you see a sign in, you know, in a club where you're playing? It said free beer tonight.
I get thousands and thousands of people knocking the door
down.
That's it.
Free beer tonight. Anyway, my favorite music, I get asked that all the time. They say, you know, you must be listening to CDs at home. You must, you know, love music. I come to work and play music. When I go home, playing more music is like work. So, you know, I do enjoy concerts. That I enjoy. I love going to concerts. And I will go and watch Bruce Springsteen because he puts on a great concert. I will see the Black Eyed Peas because they put on a great concert. I also love my kids. And my 12-year-old is at the age where she's really, really into the music world now. So I'm living through her. You know, she likes whatever, Lady Gaga. We go see the Lady Gaga concert, and I enjoy the music in the show, and I enjoy that she's enjoying the music in the show. Katy Perry is among my favorites right now. She's in my iPod. So when I'm exercising every morning, I'm listening to Katy Perry. So you know, I have a diverse background in music. I like the 70s stuff, whatever.
That sounds pretty much like myself, because somebody said, oh, you work in radio, must listen to radio a lot. And I go, well, I only listen if I really need to. The rest of the time, I'm watching television.
Exactly. You know, if you cut hair for a living, you don't want to go home and cut hair. You know, you got a lineup of people at your front door at home. Would you cut my hair?
Well, imagine how much it must be annoying for, let's say, dentists or something. They go to a party and somebody says, I'm having a problem here with my mark. I know you're a dentist. Can you just look at it? It's the same kind of thing.
Would you take the fork and poke and see if there's a cavity there, please? But no, I agree. You know, it's a and people are surprised when you tell them, you know, I don't listen to a lot of music at home. It's like, what? Oh, you don't share the love of music that I have? You know, I mean, a lot of the listeners are really, really passionate about it. And some people are so much so that they have the old jingles and libraries of stuff. And you just say, oh, my gosh, that's more, you know, I want to connect to my listener. I'm not connecting to the jingle. I want to connect to the audience. That's my greatest love of this business. That's why I keep doing it. You know, is because of the audience, because of the listeners.
The one question that I don't like being asked, because I never know how to respond, is occasionally, or quite occasionally, I'll get an email and somebody will say, oh, by the way, in 2010, on January 15th, you said blah, 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 blah. Can you talk about it a little bit more? And I go, I don't even remember what happened an hour ago.
Two years. Well, you're right. That doesn't happen often, but it does happen. And people, like I said before, are very inquisitive. They want to know. They become a member of your family. They let you into their lives, so they trust you. There's a trust factor. I mean, and that's huge because we're Americans, and at least I am. I don't know if that's where you're from originally, but I'm American. And I'm on the American government's radio network broadcasting in other places which Americans may not be so well received for very good reasons. But, you know, I'm on in their lives. They've welcomed me into their lives. And a lot of people write in and say, I love America, you know. But yet, you know, I have to be real careful about exerting that privilege, pushing myself, my views, my opinions, because I don't think that's what I'm there for. But I get people writing and saying, remember when you said so-and-so, and can you tell me about this or talk more about this, or I want to know more about your life because I've mentioned my daughter on the air. So how's Amanda doing? People kind of ingratiate themselves and develop that relationship. And so it's nice to get somebody who paid attention to what you said 2 years ago to write in and say, I was listening, I heard that, I want to know more about it. Maybe I couldn't get to you until now. It's been on my mind, and here I am. So occasionally, you know, somebody will say, what did you think of this, that, and the other? And so I respond to it.
There was one very strange show that we did. Some listeners wanted to know what I do at home. And I was actually having a barbecue that weekend. So we brought recording equipment to my house. We set up six microphones, and I did the show from my house.
Wow. Wow.
And was introducing the various people that were there at the party and everything. And somebody wrote in, and I took pictures because they thought we just did it in a studio like a radio drama. But I took the pictures. There was a microphone there in the kitchen. There was one on the balcony. And we were going from one place to the next. And we were playing the music directly on location. And people were writing, you know, they said it was like they closed their eyes. They could just imagine being there. I mean, that's one of the nice things about radio, you know. As I told people, I said, you know, I could be 6'2", blonde hair. Okay, I have the blue eyes. I could be slim. I could look like this. And, you know, who knows? I could be like 2 foot high and short and round, you know?
Girls, I just want to tell you, Keith looks exactly like Brad Pitt. He is exactly like a cross between Brad Pitt and Leonardo. Because I know Leo is very popular in Asia. So he looks like a combination of Leonardo and Brad Pitt. So girls, just imagine that. That's what you get with Keith.
I could see that actually going into a Howard Stern direction for a moment.
I got to tell you, I got to compliment you on that, because it's not often you meet somebody that has innovative, creative ideas like that, to do that at home. And that, to me, that's always been one of the secrets of success in this business, is the more real you can be, the more human you can make yourself, the more honest and sincere you can be, the more you will endear yourselves to your audience. And by saying, hey, come into my life, come to my cookout, come to my house, That's you know, something that you don't see many people do. Many people keep walls and doors shut and keep a distance and whatever, but you allowed the listeners into your life, into your space. Well, so I give you credit. Kudos.
Well, this show has always been a little weird. In the 1980s, my predecessor, Tom Meyer, who did the show for 22 years, for the anniversary one year, they decided to do the show from a hot air balloon flying over the Netherlands, at the same time taking phone calls from people around the world who were calling in.
Wow. That's amazing.
And I remembered, I listened to the show, the archive of the show, and one of the engineers who was helping it was still around. And I said, well, how did you do this? He said, well, we had a special truck that had a small dish pointed at the air balloon. We had to drive at the same time to make sure that the signals were going back and forth. And they did it live for 55 minutes.
Wow. Unbelievable.
That's amazing. Just incredible, you know. So these little things, like, you know, for example, one of the shows that I did in New York – we recorded it in Times Square. Mm-hmm. I actually had some portable stuff that I brought with me today, but this was like with real microphones. We rented stuff from the BBC, and we just did it in the middle of Times Square, and it was just, you know, describing to people what was around, pulling people aside. And I find that part of radio fascinating, when you really get the audience involved and try to paint them a picture of what's around you.
Right, right. And I would imagine you probably – like I would look at some of the legends in radio, like, for example, Orson Welles.
Oh, yes, definitely.
I mean, as being one of the pioneers, one of the greats, because he called radio the theater of the mind. And I think that that is really one of the things that makes radio so special, as you touched on. TV, you get what you get. You get what your budget allows. But radio, you can mention a tree, and everybody sees a different tree. And so I think that's fantastic, and, you know, it is great, and what we do is great, and it's, you know, a lot of fun.
Somebody that I'm a fan of, and I listen to him when I can, is Howard Stern.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, a lot of people I've heard people criticize him. It's either you love him or you hate him.
Right.
And
how would "butt bongo" translate overseas?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I heard an interview that he gave, and he said, you know what? People that love me tune in. People that hate me tune in, because they want to hear what I'm going to say so they can complain about something.
Right.
So he said it's a win-win situation.
Right.
And the thing I like about Stern is it's either you love him or you hate him. But in many ways, he has been very innovative, and he's extremely talented at what he does. Mm-hmm. Okay, sure, some of the humor, of course, will not translate to other cultures. But if you do get the humor, it is quite amazing.
Now, I'm going to tell you something right now. I'm going to give you the secret. Are you ready for the secret?
Sure.
Okay. This is the secret. This is the secret as was taught to me before I moved to Hong Kong. And it was taught to me by the person I worked for before I moved to Hong Kong, Dick Clark, who you probably have heard that name. I worked at the Unistar Radio Network in Los Angeles, which is today Westwood One. But when I was there, it was Unistar. Dick Clark was one of the owners. He had an office. He'd show up in L.A. And one of the times that I was speaking to him, he said to me, you want to be successful in this business, get an emotional response from your audience. Get an emotional response from your audience, and you will be successful. And I think that's one of the things Howard Stern does. He agitates people. He makes people laugh. He, you know, whatever. You get that emotional response from your audience, and you can become successful. Rush Limbaugh is now getting an emotional response because of something he said in the news, which is coming back at him, causing sponsors to leave his show. And so he's a radio announcer in America who is controversial, like a Howard Stern, for different reasons, and he's getting the emotional response. So if you're just on the air and you're just plain as day, you're so conservative, not ruffling feathers, not saying anything that, you know, stirs up anything, that rattles anybody, you know, you probably won't last long and you probably won't have big ratings. But the big ratings getters, they're the ones who kind of take chances and do some weird things and
push the envelope.
Push the envelope, exactly. Get that emotional response. Whether people get mad with you or mad at you, you're getting an emotional response from them.
How much leeway do you have here at the VOA to push the envelope?
That's a tough question. In reality, this is the government, you know, and in reality, I have bills to pay. So I don't want to push my envelope so far that I'm out the door with my envelope. I want to push the envelope to the point where it's within good judgment. When I start exercising poor judgment or inappropriate behavior, for the government's network, because this is not the platform for certain things. Mm-hmm. I mean, Howard Stern wouldn't work here.
Yeah.
Howard Stern obviously works on a commercial network that doesn't have censorship regulations, which commercial radio does. You know, if he was on a regular terrestrial or commercial radio station, he couldn't come on and do and say what he does.
Well, he was doing and always getting in trouble for it.
Except fines. The station was getting fined and whatever. Now there's no regulations. He does what he does. My platform is the United States government's, and I have to always remember in my mind that I am representing my government. I'm representing my country where I broadcast. So, you know, I'm not going to take myself so seriously. A lot of the journalists here do. But I'm not going to take myself so seriously that I still can't be me and I can't have a personality. I do and I will, but I'm not going to, you know, get in an area that's gray. I don't want to put myself in that position because, you know, that's something that I won't win. You know, if I get put myself in that battle, that's I'm not going to win.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's not something worth doing. I don't want to, you know, censorship, creativity, you know, keep it within good taste, keep it within the boundaries of where I am broadcasting right now and what's appropriate, not appropriate. I don't think people tuning in to me in Nigeria or in Beijing are tuning in to me, to hear me talk about my political views, because that's not what I do and I haven't done it for 10 years. So they're not tuning in to me for that. There are plenty of people here that do that. You know, I don't. So when they come to Larry London, they know what they're getting. You know, you go to McDonald's, you don't want pizza. You know you want a hamburger, right? You want french fries. You want high cholesterol. That's what you go there for. You don't go to McDonald's for wine. So
let's talk about the show for a moment. Obviously, you do take vacations every now and again.
Every now and then they let me out.
Every now and again they let you out. Do you just pre-record shows or do you repeat past editions? That was another question that somebody wanted me to ask you. His name was Chris.
Hello, Chris. The answer to that question is that there has not been one standardized procedure. Every radio station is a reflection of its program director. Every boss has a different philosophy, and we as employees follow that boss's philosophy. My previous boss wanted live radio, nothing recorded, live radio. So if I was on vacation, he would hire somebody to sit in and fill in for me. My current boss, a little different, said, hey, you know, if network television plays the best of, you know, radio does it the best of Larry King when he was on, then why not run the best of Larry London? And they rerun some of my older shows. But they can't do that for too long because it gets old, it gets stale. You know, the shelf life's only so long. If it's a great show with Lady Gaga or, you know, Adele or whatever, you can, you know, rerun it. It's not going to hurt anybody. But you just don't want to do that. And I don't get that many vacations. I'm not like, you know, taking a vacation every month. I'm a week off. You know, I don't have that kind of contract. But, you know, I will have a vacation in July. And, you know, I coach my daughter's softball team. So I'm going away for a softball tournament for a week. So I'll be off the air. And when I'm gone, I don't know what they're going to run or what they're going to do. I was off last week, had a family emergency. And so when I was gone, they had several other people fill in on the request show. And they had another announcer come in and record the music mix show that I do as well. So, but, you know, the boss has also said rerun the best of, you know, if you're gone for a day or 2 days, whatever.
Here's an extreme case, but a station that both you and I worked for before, CRI.
Mm-hmm.
There's a woman by the name of Mindy Ratner. She now works for Minnesota Public Radio.
Wow.
And she spent 1 year at CRI, and she did a show called Afternoon Concert. This is 1997, 1998, she recorded 1 year's worth of shows. Today, 2012, they're still repeating them.
Wow.
It was all recorded on the DAT. The DATs are all out of order right now. So she says, coming back the next hour, Bach. And then you hear, this hour, Beethoven. And they're just repeating them and repeating them and repeating them. And I told the PD one day, I said, does anybody write? And he said, oh, yeah, there's one guy that writes. And I looked at the letters. This one guy writes. He writes once, twice, three times a year. And it basically says the same thing. Dear Mindy, why don't you ever write back to me? And I said, did you ever just tell this poor guy that Mindy is long gone?
Oh, my goodness. That's amazing. But it doesn't surprise me. But
the VOA did a similar thing when Willis Conover passed away.
Right.
For a long time, they were running the Jazz Hour repeats. And you kind of knew when the shows were dated because every so often you'd hear an earlier one when his voice wasn't so deep.
Right.
And the next day, when he was much older. And it was like, whoa, it's like he went from being, you know, 35 to 75 in one day.
And I heard some shows near the very end when he was suffering from cancer. And at the very, very end, he sounded very ill. But he was still on and still came in and still did his show. And so, yeah, you're right. I mean, I assume somewhere in this building there's somebody that still occasionally runs some Willis Conover shows. But
yeah.
Not intentionally, not regularly, but I'm sure that happens occasionally.
I came across a guy in Moscow one time that had cassettes that he recorded off-air in the 1970s.
Wow.
And he used to distribute them to all his friends so they can listen to it, to the VOA.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
Larry London, thank you very much for letting us use the this nice studio, which I wish you can leave for a bit so we can hijack some of the equipment and take it for our own, except for the dust, which you showed me. I was surprised about that. I went, this is the VOA. They must be spotless and clean and everything, and you actually wiped some dust off something.
Well, in lieu of a souvenir, I'm going to give you a ball of dust to take with you back.
Lovely. Lovely. An open reel tape deck in here?
Yeah, isn't that nice?
Is that still used or is it just
there? No, it's just there. There are people whose programs that they have are only on a reel to reel. So the only way they could ever, old programs, previous programs, so the way they could ever access them is with a reel to reel. So we have that. In fact, I've got some Ozzy and Harriet beta tapes if you want to watch some old Avia. We can do that in my office.
Oh, boy. Larry, thank you very much for joining us on the program.
Thank you, Keith.
A lot of fun. And the next time you're in our part of the world, either in the Netherlands, let me know. If you come to Southeast Asia, let me know, and we can do it again.
I definitely will, and I really appreciate you giving me this opportunity to say hi to some old friends, to reconnect.
By the way, Ricochet. I know he's listening because he listens. You know, Rick just put out a book called Radio Chopsticks.
And he said I was in the book.
Yeah.
And I don't know where in the book. He sent me the English version.
Yeah.
And so I'm still looking for it. I'm still looking for where am I in his book and what context am I in his book?
What I did is I just put a search in the corner and said, where's Keith? So I typed in it, came to the right page.
So that's what he did. He put all his radio friends in his book.
Yeah.
So he figured we'd start talking about it on our radio shows.
Yeah, exactly.
Smart man, that Ricochet.
Larry, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Keith.
Hugo Strasser and his orchestra with I Get Around. And I have to leave you right now because I have to head to the Washington, D.C. airport to catch a flight down to the Caribbean, because my next port of call is going to be the island of Bonaire. Now, the program that we're going to be doing from Bonaire, we're going to be bringing you later this year. So you have to stay tuned to find out when that is. A special thank you to all those at the Voice of America for letting us use Studio 35 today. Also, Larry London for being on the show. So until next time, friends, this is Keith Parent saying so long, au revoir, auf Wiedersehen, adios amigos, and sayonara.